This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Welcome to Community News, a program sponsored in part by the Lions Club of Rutland. And thanks to the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind for their ongoing support. It's Friday, it's June 5th, and in the next half hour, we will be bringing you news from the Landmark. This is Paul Nato. Thank you so much for listening to The Landmark. And thanks, as always, for your support of Audio Journal. Thank you. We've got the first one is Rutland in uproar over the July 4th cancellations. And this comes from Danielle Ray, Landmark correspondent. The fallout from the town's cancellation of its beloved 4th of July parade, as well as the annual fireworks, is still being felt well beyond the borders of the town. After a Proposition 2.5 override failed at the ballot box, the town was forced to implement cuts to its budget, which included layoffs of a number of public safety personnel. As a result, town officials, in consultation with the police and the fire chiefs, decided there were not enough resources to support the popular annual events. As of press time on Monday, one of the most notable responses to the news was that Worcester County Sheriff Lou Evangelides had offered his office resources in the wake of the cancellations. I am writing to you regarding a recent announcement that the annual 4th of July parade and celebration will be canceled due to a lack of public safety resources. As Worcester County Sheriff and formerly the state representative for Rutland and surrounding communities, I have marched in the July 4th parade over 20 times. I believe that the Rutland July 4th parade is one of the best in the Commonwealth, Evangelides wrote in an email letter addressed to the select board dated May 28th. This being the 50th anniversary of the Rutland July 4th parade and the 250th celebration of our country's independence, he would like to offer the full resources of his office, the Worcester County Sheriff's Office, to continue this important and treasured tradition. As you know, in previous years, we have provided our mobile command unit to help support operations. Additionally, the Sheriff's Office is prepared to offer sworn deputies, civilian volunteers, and any resources necessary to allow the originally planned or even the alternative of having a scaled back one, which would probably be even better, maybe. The sheriff signed off saying he looks forward to hearing from the board so we can collaborate and ensure the long-standing tradition continues for the citizens of Rutland and Worcester County. Worcester County Sheriff's Office Director of Communications, Eric Eisner, reported on Monday morning that Evangelides received a response from the Rutland Town Administrator, Heather Butler, stating that the town select board would discuss this letter at its June 1st meeting, which will happen after the Landmark's press deadline. Okay. The police chief responded and cited labor practice concerns. Eisner also said, he was citing a recent meeting in which Rutland Police Chief Nicholas Monaco said that hiring outside help for the event after laying off the town's personnel would likely prompt a grievance filing by the police union. Okay, I can understand that. Locals have been very vocal on social media about the parade and the fireworks being canceled, with people seemingly split on the issue. There are those who are sad and outraged by the news, and there are others who point out that it was made clear by the town and others involved with the yearly tradition that if the budget override vote didn't go through, this would be the outcome. Those who voted no on the override, you now have to live with the outcome. those who voted yes on the override, you know, now you have to suffer along with those who voted no. One woman commented on a post asking if the pancake breakfast is still on, which it is. You get what you voted for. Stop crying about not having the fireworks or the parade. People are losing their jobs. There will not be enough police, fire, EMS, and DPW to close roads, patrol a common with an extra 10 to 15,000 people coming. Wow. And to respond to calls in the town. And you got what you voted for. Now deal with it. Another woman posted the following in the Wachusett Chat Facebook page, echoing the above sentiments. Deal with the consequences of your vote. Don't cry about losing the fireworks and parade when you should be looking at the loss of police and fire personnel. So when someone in your family needs medical attention, I would hope that there will be someone to respond. Or if your home catches on fire, again, I hope someone responds. It's not, nor ever has been, scare tactics. It sounds like it is, though. It was all laid out in black and white for all to read. There were notices about the town meeting. Out of the 9,800 residents, only about 350 showed up. That is pretty sad. And out of the 9,800 residents, only 1,800 voted. After the first call, your insurance company asked, and ask them how much more you will be paying due to the ISO rating changing due to less fire personnel. Oof. Multiple requests made via email to town officials, police, fire, and the 4th of July committee for quotes and actions and reactions went unanswered. An updated schedule of events updated, So you got to go to the Rutland MA hyphen 4. Oh, my God. What a weird email address. Can't even read it. Along with a note from the Rutland 4th of July committee explaining the situation. Although the 4th of July committee successfully raised the funds needed for the event, the celebration cannot take place without adequate public safety staffing. Police, fire, and EMS personnel are essential to ensure the safety of attendees, manage traffic, maintain emergency response coverage throughout the town. The message states, due to anticipated staffing limitations, our police and fire chiefs have determined that they cannot safely support both the event and routine emergency services at the same time. Moving forward, under these conditions, would put both attendees and the broader community at risk. We also explored the possibility of bringing in outside personnel, the statement continues. However, a unified command structure and coordinated operations, doing so would create additional safety concerns rather than resolve them. This decision is based solely on the public safety considerations. It is not related to funding, availability, or intended as a response to any community viewpoints. A special town meeting is scheduled for June 16th, and a warrant for it is slated to be closed at the June 1st Select Board meeting. There has been some talk about a special election in September to go for another budget override, but there's no confirmation of that at this point. So, as we all know, if you're going to cut services, something's got to give. And we've got another story from Ken Cleveland. High winds, rain add to Paxton costs. As the town deals with its budget issues and planning a special town meeting, the wind and the rain that hit the area on May 19th added to costs. The town will face added emergency costs incurred mainly to the winds that toppled many trees, including some that fell onto houses, and caused enough damage to prompt Select Board Chair Julie Pignatori to declare a local emergency. But that financial impact to next year's budget, since it declared emergencies can push costs to the next year's budget, she said at the board's May 26 meeting. The costs will also take a while to compile. Fire Chief Michael Pignatori said that at the peak of the storm, more than 300 homes had lost power. Numerous roadways were obstructed by downed trees and wires. Unfortunately, it happened at 5:30 in the afternoon, right at the height of rush hour, and it was kind of tricky moving all the traffic as well. In addition to widespread tree and electrical infrastructure damage, six homes either had trees fall directly onto them or sustained significant wind-related structural damage, representing the most serious impacts to residential properties. The town's response was immediate and coordinated across all departments, the fire chief said. The fire department managed multiple calls during and immediately after the storm, including gaining access to residents impacted by fallen trees, mitigating hazards, and clearing access points at Moore State Park to allow the visitors who were there to safely exit. Wow, they must have got trapped in there. Anna Maria College remains front of mind for residents as well, as the select board and other officials pull together a committee to ensure that the town's interests are protected with the college closings. The Transition Advisory Committee is going to come together at May 26th meeting of the board, so they've had that, Town Administrator Robert Burbick said. I've had a couple of people reach out from the public wanting to be a part of it, but then also what boards and committees should probably be approached to see if they can nominate a member to come over to that advisory committee. The plan includes members from the planning board, the zoning board, the EDC, the Capital Improvements and Planning Committee, and the Paxton Municipal Light Department. Burbick said they were working towards the June 1st meeting, and then we'll have the list of the people from the public not on boards and committees. Then we can make a determination on their involvement as well. In other business, the board approved an effort to create a student business mentorship program from the Economic Development Committee. Tony Dominic of the committee described the program before the board voted to support it. They're proposing is really just the creation of a mentorship program in town that could benefit the kids from Paxton. It will focus on people in high school or college ages 14 up to 22. People from business owners to professionals could participate. Dominic said surrounding towns are doing similar programs. Princeton, Rutland, there's other towns that are doing similar programs, so I think it's important for us to have something like this, he said. Dominic said they proposed a budget of $700, which he said they felt they could get covered through grants or even donations. So I didn't know you had such horrible storms out there in Paxton recently, but they've been known to fly through there. Boy. Hey, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to Audio Journal, and this is the community news program called The Landmark, and it is a production of Audio Journal. So thank you so much for listening. Story from Holden. And it's the Holden Town Meeting's coming up. It's going to be June 8th, and this comes from Christian B. Payson, who is the editor. The annual town meeting will be held Monday, June 8th, in the auditorium of Wachusett Regional High School, 1401 Main Street. Now, check-in begins at 5:30 p.m., and the meeting will start at 7 p.m. The warrant for the meeting contains 29 articles, including a citizen's petition in support of changing the state flag and seal. Most of the articles are budgetary, asking the town to permit rising and appropriating or transferring money from various town funds. The Wachusett Regional School District budget is the largest item. It's Article 22, which lists the town's assessment at $41,408,155. That amount was reduced by the Wachusett Regional School District Committee on May 19th. Huh. At that meeting, Superintendent James Riley announced that the district's Chapter 70 funds from the state had increased from about $65 per student to $170 per student, resulting in an increase of just over $555,000. All five Wachusett Town assessments were reduced proportionately, with Holden's going down to $41,149,034. The warrant item will be presented with the corrected number at the town meeting. Also of interest, voters will also be asked to appropriate the remaining funds borrowed for the construction of the playing fields on Industrial Drive to pay for some of the costs to rehab the town pool. Huh. The town meeting warrant is available in its entirety at holdenmass.gov, and you can find it all there. Now, a town meeting handbook, which contains budget reviews, details of the capital budgets, and committee's recommendations, is available at the Holden Mass Gov site, too. So you get on there, you can see all the issues and kind of hopefully get, as we all need to be more educated on our issues so we can make good decisions, huh? Local things that are going on. There is a community lunch. It's going to be held at the First Church in Sterling. All are welcome. It's this Saturday. It's free. There's no reservation. Food is love. Let's see here. It's going to start at noontime. The menu is a turkey Polynesian spinach salad, a rice, and mixed veggies. Also, if you want to contact them on that, you can call 978-422-6657. Now, there's going to be a Holden Farmers Market every Tuesday from May to October. It gets held from 3 to 6 p.m. It's across from the Gale Free Library. There's going to be local vegetables, fruits, and veggies, bread and baked goods, meat and eggs, milk and cheese, fresh cut flowers, crafts and soaps, and much, much more. So once again, it's across from the Gale Free Library in Holden. It's every Tuesday. So some other things coming up, and I think we might have talked about this one. This one excites me. The Sterling Summer Concerts. The Summer Concert Series lineup is set. Concerts are going to be held from 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesdays from June to August at Memorial Park. It's right behind the fire station in Sterling. June 10th, you got Rocking Grass. June 17th, the Rock Blockers. June 24th, the Band from Uncle. Woof. July 1st, Jim Atkinson Band. July 8th, Houston Bernard. July 15th, Slowgrass. July 22nd, Rusty Buckets. July 29th, Illusions. August 5th, you got Rampage Trio. August 12th, you got Rhythm. August 19th, PT Pickers. August 26th, Rose Gold Glasses. So if you like music, boy, that's a good way to hear it, especially when it's free and you get to hear some new and maybe some really good bands out there. So that's always nice, always nice. Information from Rutland. Effective May 19th, the Mass DEP has issued a water ban due to a central Mass being in a level 2 drought. As a result of this, All non-essential outdoor water use is banned from the exception of drip irrigation, handheld hose watering cans. The ban will remain in effect until the Mass DEP provides further guidance. So, water ban in Rutland. In yard waste, pursuant to Rutland's Public Ways, Bylaw Chapter 6, Article 1, it is a violation to put grass and yard debris in a public roadway. The debris causes issues with the stormwater system and presents a driving hazard to motorcycles. Please note that fines can be assessed by the DPW superintendent. So don't rake your stuff, your grass clippings, or your leaves into the road. And be careful with motorcycles. I have one obituary this week, and it's for Renate Doré. She was 88 years old. She was born February 11, 1938, and she passed on May 21st. She was from Renate Rennie E. Doré, 88, of Nashua, New Hampshire, passed away peacefully on May 21st, 2026. Rennie was born Renate Erica Grunhardt on February 11, 1938 in Konigsberg, Prussia, to Kurt Eric Grunhardt and Frieda Anna Lasaga. After losing their home during World War II, the family endured years of hardship before eventually settling in Helmstedt, Germany. There, she met her first husband, Philip D. Rinn, before immigrating to the United States in 1963 and settling in Princeton, Mass. Rennie spent more than 50 years in Princeton, where she built lasting friendships and was often found on the tennis court, her favorite place, playing with fierce determination and competitive spirit. At home, she loved cooking traditional German meals, including sauerkraut, cabbage rolls, and the family favorite German pork chops. For the past 30 years, Rennie shared a loving life with her devoted husband, Melvin. Together, they enjoyed golf, gardening, and competitive games of cribbage. After many happy years in Princeton, they eventually settled in Nashua in 2013. Known lovingly as only by her family, Rennie is survived by her husband, Melvin, her daughter, Jennifer Yandel, and her husband, Tony, her grandchildren, Melissa, and her husband, Corey, and Benjamin, and his fiancée, Lindsay, and her beloved great-grandchildren, Penelope and Evelyn. She was predeceased by her granddaughter, Abigail, as well as her mother, eight siblings, and extended family members in Germany. Rennie will be remembered for her spirited and sassy personality, her impeccably kept home, her independence, and the meaningful way she connected with those she loved. Her vibrant spirit, strength, and resilience will be deeply missed by all who knew her. Now, there's going to be a private burial, which will be held in Hollis, with a memorial gathering to follow at a later date. Smith and Hale Funeral Home of 63 Elm Street, Milford, New Hampshire, is handling the burial. So, once again, it was for Renate Doré, Rennie. A Rutland company was fined for the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection has issued a $101,000 penalty to property developer Bryce Estates, Inc., for violating the Wetlands Protection Act and the Clean Waters Act during the construction of the Bryce Estates subdivision in Rutland. Ooh. During site inspections in 2024 and 2025, the Mass DEP observed numerous environmental violations, including the wetland filling, unpermitted tree cutting, inadequate erosion controls. Violations largely occurred within a protected waters in the Ware River watershed, and it affected both the site and downstream resources. Much of the work observed during site inspections were not consistent with the plans, designs, and permit conditions approved under the Order of Conditions issued by the Rutland Conservation Commission and a 401 water quality certification issued by the Mass DEP. Developers that fail to follow the terms of their permits can cause unnecessary and serious impacts to our natural resources, said Andrea Briggs, acting director of Mass DEP's Central Regional Office in Worcester. Permit holders need to ensure property controls are in place and the controls are used during construction to avoid causing environmental damage. As part of the settlement agreement, Bryce Estates, Inc. agreed to restore and replicate altered wetland resource areas and pay the $101,000 fine. So that's sad to hear they did that, but hey, that brings us to the end of this week's program. And I just want to thank everybody for listening. This community news program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or Braille, please call 508-797-1117. Now, archived editions of this program are available. They're on our website, audiojournal.org, or you can go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or your Android device. I'm Paul Nato. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, hey, if you got that big day this week, have some fun with it. You can never have too much fun. You can get in trouble, but you can never have too much fun.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is Bird Note. Birds are clever creatures. It's part of what makes them so fun to watch. But human infrastructure, like open pipes, can turn a bird's natural curiosity into a death sentence. Open vertical pipes are commonly used to build fences, anchor gates, and post signs. Inquisitive birds often inspect these cavities in their search for food and nest sites. For example, this western bluebird can comfortably fit through a hole just 1.5 inches wide. But without enough room to turn around or spread his wings in the smooth pipe, the little bird will be trapped and eventually die. Open pipes not only kill birds, they also entomb insects, reptiles, and small mammals. It's why conservationists call them death pipes. Thankfully, there's an easy way to protect birds from death pipes. Cap them. Conservation groups like the Tucson Bird Alliance recommend covering any open pipe 1 inch in diameter or wider. You can use store-bought caps or make your own by plugging the hole with cardboard and backfilling the opening with cement mix. You'll find more resources on how to cover death pipes safely and other actions you can take for birds when you visit our website, birdnote.org. I'm Ariana Rimmel.